This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Morgan Davis is an investigator for Texas's Department of Family and Protective Services. He says part of his job is to make sure that the children living in the homes he investigates feel like someone is watching out for them.
Just to have a friendly face walking in the home and saying, "I see you, you are loved, you are respected, and you have done nothing wrong," for any child.
Morgan is a transgender man. He says he wanted to work for a child welfare agency so that he could be the kind of advocate he never had when he was growing up.
If you look different or you feel different, and, you know, for myself, I've always looked like a little boy, although I was born in the gender of female. I always look like a little boy. And so oftentimes there will be bullying. You oftentimes feel isolated or scared. And to have an adult be able to look you in the face and say, "I see you, you're going to be okay, I got you," it would have meant the world.
In February, Texas Governor Greg Abbott issued a new directive, ordering Morgan's agency to investigate the homes of children whose doctors have prescribed medical treatments that trans advocates describe as gender-affirming care. Governor Abbott described these treatments, including ones that can be reversed, as sex change procedures, and he categorized them as a form of child abuse. This new directive followed a proposed Texas bill limiting which bathrooms trans children could use, and another proposed bill limiting which sports teams trans children could join. So for Morgan Davis, this was yet another declaration from his state government that seemed designed to make life difficult for those kids. Morgan hoped this latest move was maybe just political bluster that would blow over without having any real-world effect.
But within 24 hours, I had a case on my desk. So that was a bit of a shock.
Morgan took that case and met with that family. Then he submitted his resignation. The governor's directive has since been frozen by a legal injunction. Some families with trans children have begun to flee the state, not waiting around to see if the directive will be upheld. Meanwhile, Morgan's still at work, wrapping up his existing caseload before he leaves his job next month. He was Southern polite to us, calling my producer and me ma'am and sir. He also spoke in hushed tones. He was talking to us from inside the Child Protective Services building.
Do you feel like you might pay a price for speaking out like this?
Yes, sir. There has been a fear of retaliation, and it truly is all right. I've been telling everybody, I'm an adult. Come for me. I'm going to be fine. I'm proud to do this, genuinely, because I always joke, if this is the hill I go out on, I'd be more than glad to do that.
Today on the show, Morgan Davis's moral dilemma in Texas and what he would say to Governor Greg Abbott if he could. I'm Seth Stevenson, filling in for Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around.
This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let's talk about the first case that came across your desk as part of this new directive. Your supervisors offered to reassign that case. Why did you decide to take it?
I felt like if anybody was going to take that case, that it should be me. I'm in a very unique position that I have not as a youth. My transition began about a year ago. And so as an adult, but was able to speak to medical professionals, who have treated youth for decades. And the home I was allowed to walk into was exemplary. These parents had an impeccable job.
What was it like for you as a trans man to meet with that family?
It was tough because when initially I was allowed to speak to the parent, it just felt an overwhelming sadness, especially with parents that are just trying to take care of their child and have done so brilliantly. But then having to come into their home as an agent of the state and question them regarding that care. So I think there was also a bit of fear, definitely, and just fear and sadness.
What happened on your visit? What kinds of things did you talk to them about?
On this visit, I was so grateful. They had hired attorneys for the parents and for the child, which I thought was brilliant. The norm is not for CPS to come into your life. And so when they do, especially in this case, when you know that the family has done nothing wrong, the attorneys present were able to guide the investigation to keep this family safe. So that you go in as an investigator and you assess the home for safety. An example would be, being allowed to walk around the home and seeing, proper bedding. Is there proper food? Do you have water? But these attorneys were quite brilliant and knew right off the bat that I would be asking for release of information for the child's medical records, and immediately refused. And then when certain questions, we have what is called a global interview. And many of the questions, like, how do you discipline your child? The child's medical care, may I get the name of the doctor? Immediately these questions were shot down. But I was very grateful that the attorneys were present and there was an ad litem for the child, and that they were able to guide the interview to a safe conclusion.
Did you file a report in that case?
Yes, this case was treated much differently. All the documentation was in real time. Oftentimes we have about 24 hours to enter. It was in real time. One thing that was different as well, my instructions that evening, that the case would not be closed, that it would be staffed with the higher ups. And that point was a bit shocking because in cases involving the higher ups, the single case I have ever had that has been the case, it was a child death case. All other cases, usually my supervisor will say, close it, or I'll staff it with her higher up and then close it. So that evening, the first indication that this was going to be treated differently was when I had to go back into the home and let the family know that the case would not be closed, but that it would be staffed the following week.
Do you know what's going on with that family now?
Sure. Unfortunately, I'm not allowed to speak to it. I have not had contact with the family since the initial interview and have been directed not to have contact. But I hope someday to see them when this is all over and tell them we're fighting for them with boots on the ground to try to end this.
You decided to resign shortly after handling that case. Why did you decide to resign?
I did this job to protect children, and that's part of our mission statement. When it became clear that I was being asked to go into homes that I knew to be safe, based solely for a political directive, and to continue cases that I knew should be closed, based on no medical evidence to the contrary, I couldn't do it. It felt like a betrayal.
I think several of your colleagues have also resigned. Have you talked to them about their decisions?
Yes. In speaking to people who thought that they would retire in these jobs and with a great deal of pride in the work that they've done, and to feel betrayed by the very department that they dedicated their lives to is heartbreaking. But it's also, I'm very proud of them personally, because they're taking a stance that, sir, you mentioned retaliation. I am a little bit nervous for them, but I'm very grateful to them because they're taking a stand. Because also there was a concern. They said, if this is only the starting point, where does it end? This is sucking so much air out of the department when we have real problems. We are ripe for a tragedy in that the caseloads are unmanageable and are not able to get to all the children who truly do need us, who truly need us, because this has taken a toll.
What's your sense of the current mood at your agency?
I will say genuinely in our office, if people are not looking for other jobs, they are actively trying to transfer to look for other jobs. Currently in my unit, in a little bit, there'll be one person left, and that's me. And then I'm leaving. And people are distraught. The morale is incredibly low. You know, sir, this is an agency that had gone through the pandemic. These are caseworkers that were boots on the ground during the pandemic. And when kids were back in school and having, unfortunately, to see the abuse and neglect that had taken place over those 2 years. And then to be asking these same workers to work directly against a child's best interests is just, it's unfathomable, but it's happening.
More from my conversation with Morgan Davis after the break.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, listeners, whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance, too. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance. Then they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now, that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You talked about some ways that these cases are getting handled differently than other cases. One way a case like this is being handled differently was a sense of secrecy. Did you feel like people were trying to keep this off the books in a way?
I did. We're not really sure how many cases have been filed in the state of Texas. Even asking that question directly, like how many cases have been filed, or will we be seeing more cases? And the comment back to me was, you'll know if you get one. Because it is currently under an appeal with the Texas State Supreme Court, the cases are just being held. But even when in the district court, when they filed the injunction against the directive, and the appeals court, when they filed the injunction against the directive, we were still not allowed to close them. In my particular case, it was already ruled that they did not believe abuse and neglect to have occurred and had requested on multiple occasions to close it. And the answer was no. And I've never had a case where I was not allowed to contact the family. We also have a policy that every 45 days a child is seen. I was told not to contact the family and that we will miss that deadline, which is against policy. If they truly do believe, sir, that abuse and neglect has occurred, I do not believe this is the course of action they would take.
In your understanding, what kind of treatments would fall under the category of gender-affirming care?
Based on my experience, sir, for the youth, it could, you know, therapy. Oftentimes, it genuinely for affirming care. Hypothetically, if you were female, you would present more masculine, or you would wear clothes that you would perceive you more masculine. You would explore that way, or you could possibly be prescribed gender blockers, which are reversible. You know, we always say you want these beautiful children to get the chance to be beautiful adults, and so the care they're receiving is to guide them to what decision they will make as an adult. There was a concern regarding a child taking estrogen or testosterone. I don't know in all cases, the majority of cases, that is not the case. They will be given gender blockers, which have to be prescribed by a doctor, but they are reversible. So the care that's being given is to guide them to the next decision. Ironically, what we're doing is building a set of circumstances that these parents will have to, if their child is stating to them, I need help, I'd rather commit suicide than live. Because we've now cut that off, you know, I think one of the largest hospitals here in Texas is now stating that we'll no longer provide gender affirming care. So you're shutting off the avenues these parents have who are responsible and trying to get medical care legitimately for their child will now be ironically put in the position where they will have to illegally seek out help.
I think your office's policy prior to this directive was that they wouldn't investigate a case where a parent is giving medication to a child that's been prescribed by a doctor. Have you talked to any doctors who've prescribed these kinds of treatments about whether they have thoughts about this policy?
Yes, sir. You know, it just feels like this is a different era. I hope it's all right to say that I receive medical care every 3 months. I'm seen by a doctor for blood work every 3 months. And so in speaking to them, what's frightening is when you call now, they don't even say their name. There's a fear, just a genuine fear. It's incomprehensible that someone, myself, I'll use myself as an example. Sir, I have no medical background. And so for me to question a doctor with decades of medical experience with children, I mean, God, it is heartbreaking. Also, sir, because they are doctors and nurses and they are mandated reporters. And if they don't report, they could lose their license, their livelihood. It just breaks your heart because these are just good people trying to do a good thing and get children care so these beautiful kids can be beautiful adults and they're being stymied. I mean, how many times in our lives can we say that there was a medical need that was met for children that's effective, that's keeping them with us, but because of someone's personal belief, as an agent of the state, I'm going to go in and say stop. And so that's why when people ask me why I resign, I say it morally, it was inevitable.
What do you plan to do after you leave your job?
I very much want to stay in child advocacy. And I pray that they let me. I do have a fear of retaliation, but I very much want to stay in child advocacy. I truly feel like it's a calling.
There's currently an injunction on this directive. How do you see it playing out down the road? Is this going to be how things are done now? Will the injunction be lifted? What kind of reckoning is there eventually going to be with this policy?
Unfortunately, it looks like that they're not quite sure what the Texas State Supreme Court will do. The hope is that they will keep the injunction, but it's already kind of been whispered that the appeal has already been set, if they do, that it will go to the Supreme Court. And I know it's a silly hope, but I hope it does, because then it can be shut down completely. We've got real problems, real big problems that, you know, we have sex trafficking, we have abuse and neglect. For this to be the platform that they stand on is unthinkable. But unfortunately, it looks like it will go to the Supreme Court. But in that time period, we still have a case. These cases are open. And this family will be in limbo for what could last up to 2 years. But it doesn't seem that this is the end. It just seems like, it almost seems like this is just a gateway. And it's sad that they consider kids to be the most vulnerable to open that door, which is sickening.
What would you say to Governor Abbott if you got a meeting with him?
Please stop this. Please. And he has to be a good man. He's dedicated his life to public service. Please just listen to me. Please listen to the medical professionals. Listen to the people, the boots on the ground that are telling you. Listen to an old man. Just man to man. Please don't hurt these kids. These kids deserve better. They have earned it tenfold. They have been bullied. And they are beautiful, and they are targeted, and they are exemplary, and they should be applauded by the governor's office. Let these beautiful kids be beautiful adults.
Morgan Davis, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for what you're doing.
Morgan Davis is an investigator in the Travis County office of the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services. His resignation is effective next month. And that's the show. What Next is produced by Mary Wilson, Elena Schwartz, and Carmel Delshad. We're getting a ton of help from Anna Rubinova. We are led by our executive producer, Joanne Levine, and by Alicia Montgomery. I'm Seth Stevenson, filling in for Mary Harris. Catch you back in this feed tomorrow.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this for me is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.